Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic this hour is the state of San Francisco's parks. When it comes to parks, let's face it, San Francisco has plenty to go around. Our Rec and Park system includes more than 220 neighborhood parks and natural areas, 179 playgrounds, 82 recreation centers and clubhouses, a multitude of swimming pools, golf courses, and other sports venues, and significant landmarks ranging from Coit Tower to Candlestick Park to Yosemite's Camp Mather, and let's not forget Golden Gate Park. The majority of city residents report visiting our parks regularly and cite them as the key to their quality of life. And according to a recent study by the Trust for Public Land, our park system is in fact the best of any city in the country, based on total acreage of parkland, ease of access, and per capita spending. An encouraging picture indeed. But at the same time, Rec and Park reports that it has lost more than 25% of its general fund support over a five-year period, while it continues to face rapidly rising labor costs. Are our parks in danger of being underfunded? And if so, how worried should we be? This hour, we'll find out directly from the source as we discuss with General Manager Phil Ginsberg the funding challenges the department faces and how it plans to meet them in the coming fiscal year. This may include the $195 million Parks Improvement Bonds if it passes on the November ballot. So we'll ask Phil Ginsberg many questions related to that bond. How did programs get decided? What will happen with that money? And we'll also ask him to talk about new sources of revenue that Rec and Park is counting on and how you might be affected. And finally, we'll ask, what will all this mean for your favorite neighborhood park and how can you participate in the process? So joining me in the studio to discuss these issues tonight is Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of San Francisco's Recreation and Parks Department. Before joining Rec and Park in July 2009, Phil served as Chief of Staff to Mayor Gavin Newsom. He also served as head of San Francisco's Department of Human Resources and at one point was deputy city attorney. So welcome, Phil Ginsberg, to the program.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here and happy National Recreation and Park Month.
Great. And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. We'll open our lines in about 20 minutes. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Post a comment on KALW.org or on our Facebook page. So, Phil, let's start by talking about the scope of the Rec and Park in San Francisco. The statistics that I mentioned in the beginning there make it the best park system in any city in the country. Tell us a little bit more about some of the gems that that you're proud of.
Well, we are just incredibly lucky to be blessed with as much open space as we have and enjoy in San Francisco, and as much diverse types of recreational amenities. And you know, the Trust for Public Land award a report that found San Francisco as the very best urban park system in the country is a true feather in our cap, something we should all be proud about. San Franciscans are incredibly passionate about open space. It's very important to us because of our urban density. And it's a wonderful system. I mean, you recited the numbers pretty well. In the city system, we have nearly 4,000 acres of open space, 220 neighborhood parks. Golden Gate Park is our largest, but you know, we're right here at right on the edge of McLaren Park, which is 360 acres and just an incredible, incredible asset. And we've got a little something for everyone in our system. You know, we should all be very proud. I think the most telling stat from the Trust for Public Land is that 96% of San Franciscans are within a 10-minute walk of a park, which is truly fantastic.
And how far back does the history of Rec and Park stretch? How many decades?
Well, our oldest park is actually Portsmouth Square, which was established way back in 1847. But our park system was really founded with the creation of Golden Gate Park about 141, 42 years ago. And what's really interesting about the story is that right around the time of the Gold Rush and after Central Park had been created, San Franciscans wanted a place to relax, a place to get away from work. And our city founders invited Frederick Olmsted, who had designed Central Park, out to San Francisco and said, we've got this great piece of land out on the western end. We call it the Outside Lands, and we'd like you to design a park that's like Central Park. And Frederick Olmsted said, no thanks, can't be done. It was all sand and beach and dunes. And a year or two later, a gentleman by the name of William Hammond Hall teamed with John McLaren, and they figured out a way to do it by mixing oats in the sand and giving growth, giving birth really to Golden Gate Park, which at 1,017 acres is actually a little bit bigger and certainly better than Central Park.
Oh, boy.
But we're biased.
and with 12% of San Francisco real estate belonging to Reckon Park, you definitely sit on one of the most valuable resources of the city.
Yeah, it's, again, it's an incredible system and something that, you know, San Franciscans are incredibly passionate about. Over two-thirds of San Franciscans are, you know, actively use a park at least once a month. And many are in our parks once a week. And, you know, in terms of helping families thrive and keeping families healthy and safe and living in this city, our parks play an incredibly important role in our quality of life. It is a place to, you know, rejuvenate and recreate and exercise and to, frankly, get away from some of the challenges of urban living.
And so, of course, juxtaposing that introduction to the current funding problems you're experiencing, explain for us how a park system that means so much to the people that live in this city is having a hard time making ends meet.
Well, government is having a hard time in general. And, you know, I think, like many governments, you know, health and public safety, the health department, the police department, we tend to focus or prioritize our budgetary resources on some of those functions when, in fact, you know, parks are, frankly, the antidote to good health and the antidote to public safety. And, you know, the sad truth of the matter is that although we are responsible for stewarding over 12% of the city's land, our department receives less than 2% of the city's general fund. And, you know, so we're getting used to doing more with less. Like many city departments, we're not the only city agency that provides vital public services that's struggling. But, you know, this is actually a, you know, a national issue where urban park systems are typically under-resourced and, you know, at least in the perspective of park advocates, under-invested.
And with, I understand, around 850 employees at this point, less, more?
Yeah, you know, we've lost in the last, you know, we've been asked to solve for about $45 million worth of budget reductions in the last 6 or 7 years, and we've lost a number of staff. But the good news is that, you know, I think the worst of times has frankly passed, and I think this budget was a great budget, and we're really grateful to the mayor and to the Board of Supervisors for recognizing the importance of open space in this city. And, you know, while we still had to trim the sails a little bit, this was a budget that is far better than we've experienced in the past, and you will see no program cuts, you're going to see no layoffs, no major fee increases, and, you know, to the contrary, we've been able to invest a little bit in our gardener apprenticeship program. We're beginning to invest a little bit in our aquatics program, and we want to open up, expand our pool hours. So it's actually, all things considered, an NPR pun, as it were, not a pretty good budget from our perspective.
So why don't you break down the funding sources for us so we understand how a department such as yours you know, brings different streams of money together to make the parks the resource that they are.
Sure. The sources of revenue for our about $120 million, $125 million budget come from three primary sources. They come from the city's general fund, which is the main bucket of money that the city has to pay for a variety of services and programs. It comes from something called an open space fund where we receive directly about 2.5 cents of every $100 of property tax revenue that is apportioned to the city. Property tax revenues are split between the city and the state, but of the revenue that the city derives, we get 2.5 cents of every $100. So that's about a third of our revenue. The general fund is about a third, and then a third is the money that we earn. And it's really earned revenue, which comes from a variety of sources, sources big and sources small, ranging from, you know, program and permit fees, ranging from our tenants. The San Francisco 49ers are in Candlestick Park, which is one of our properties, at least for a few years longer. We operate a number of parking garages below some of our parks and plazas, which provide us with revenue. And then we have concerts, things like the Outside Lands concert in Golden Gate Park last year contributed $1.4 million. And, you know, we've got our share of food vendors and special events. All of that combined makes up over a third of our budget. And as the general fund pot keeps shrinking, the only way to, frankly, avoid reducing services, which nobody wants, or increasing fees, which nobody wants, is to continue to try to earn some revenue to fill the gap. And in our mind, you know, our staff has been, our programs and services are so vital that, you know, we didn't want to cut anymore. And I think we've been pretty successful at avoiding a situation like has happened in the state of California, where the state has been faced with, what, 71 or 72 park closures?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're actually at the point where we are in conversations with the state and the State Parks Foundation about helping to keep Candlestick Point, which is a state park, to keep it open. And that's pretty amazing. So, you know, I'm actually quite proud of the work our staff has done and the support that we've gotten from volunteers and park advocates and nonprofit park organizations like the San Francisco Parks Alliance. We have to be a little creative and a little entrepreneurial, we're actually thriving even in a challenging economic climate.
Hmm. So what was it like over the leaner years, probably over the last, 5 years or so,
yeah,
where general fund cuts occurred and you had to trim your workforce? What was that like?
It was really challenging, and it was very upsetting for everyone, park users and park staff alike. And I think it really created a very poignant sense of importance of our mission, because our mission was really threatened. And, you know, I'm very proud of the way the park community, park advocates, and our staff really came together to figure out new ways to do business. We are an organization, you know, we joke we're a little bit of a laboratory for 21st century government, trying to figure out how we can continue to keep programs running in an environment in which people don't want to pay new taxes, don't want any reduction in services, but the cost of government is increasing. It's a really horrible math problem. And, you know, I think our proudest moment was when our staff really came together to reinvent the way we deliver public recreation. And, you know, by paying attention to best practices and being open and willing to think about a different model and a different strategy, we've been able to increase program hours, increase scholarship opportunities for, you know, for kids and young families with far fewer staff.
What are those best practices?
Well, we went from a model of having basically our staff kind of fanned out at all of our facilities in kind of a sort of a fixed post staffing model, as it were, where as budget cuts hit, we had, you know, a small number of recreation directors at any one particular facility. And that particular recreation director was responsible for managing the facility, doing the programming, and engaging the community. And it's hard to do all those things with, you know, a fixed number of people. And what happened was programming really suffered. So if that particular recreation director liked to coach basketball, that's what the community got. If a particular recreation director at another site liked, you know, arts and music programs, that's what the community got. And we moved to a very different model where we have people who manage or operate the facility, but our programming staff is much more flexible. And we, as a result, we've been able to offer a vast array of new programs like rock climbing and skateboarding and kayaking and, you know, Pilates, you know, programs for kids, programs for seniors. And so we've actually been able to increase the number and the diversity of the programs that we offer with fewer staff. And it's been
And so you've taken your permanent staff and had them do the operations and the administration, and then the content, so to speak, is provided by
these temporary staff with specific expertise. So we've been able to attract, you know, young folks out of college or people who want to get into the field that have a particular skill and a particular talent, and they're doing the instructing. And while our you know, smaller permanent staff, you know, supervises the programs, coordinates the programs, manages the facilities, but we've got, you know, a more dynamic staff to actually do the programming, and it's really working.
So that's how you got smart about how to deliver better programs, perhaps, or expanded programs with less. What did you have to do that you're not so happy that you had to do?
Well, you know, we still have to get by without an adequate number of staff to really maintain and care for our parks. SPUR, the city's public policy think tank, just last year did a study and said, you know, given the amount of acreage that we're responsible for stewarding and the number of facilities that we have, we're probably about $30 million short of what our operating budget really needs to be robust. And so, you know, we constantly have to, you know, spread things around. We need more gardeners. We need more custodians. We need more structural maintenance staff. We need more park patrol officers. So we're still having to get by with less. And I think the one thing that that I would focus on, that one decision that we had to make, was we have 25 really large rec centers around the city, but we've got these smaller clubhouses. And we had to make a decision rather than to operate all of the clubhouses with our own staff, we needed to go out and find partners. And we found some great partners, the Boys and Girls Club of San Francisco, the YMCAs, to help us with these smaller facilities. You know, we're in the business of providing, you know, healthy recreation and clean, safe, fun parks. And, you know, it is frustrating for us all not to have quite as much staff as we need to do it, as robustly as we'd like to do it.
And according to that same SPUR report that you mentioned, it's also mentioned there that there is at this point, or this is as of September of last year, $1.4 billion of deferred maintenance needs. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean on the ground?
Well, so you have to start again with the vastness of our system and the fact that, as we noted earlier, it's 140 years old. And, you know, I think government historically doesn't do as good of a job thinking about long-term maintenance needs as it should. It tries to get through today's problems today and doesn't always focus as much on tomorrow as I think, frankly, we all should. And maybe sometimes we make those decisions at home, right? We'd rather take our home budgets and do something today than, you know, put money away for the roof that needs replacement a few years down the road. So as a result, we've accumulated a significant amount of deferred maintenance needs in our system. Our irrigation system is old and crumbling. A lot of our buildings need, you know, just a vast amount of updating, seismic retrofitting. So that's the bad news and the challenging news. The good news is that we've begun to chip away at that issue. We spend a lot of time tonight talking about our operating budget. We also do invest in our capital programming. And Frank Mayor Lee, when he was city administrator, started something called the city's 10-year capital plan. And since then, the city's been much more thoughtful about thinking about the long-term capital investments that the city's infrastructure needs. And so as a result, we've benefited from two parks bonds in 2000 and 2008. And we hope to have another parks bond, as you mentioned, on the ballot in November. And this gives us an opportunity to really address those needs and to significantly chip away at them. We also need to be smarter about the way, we design our facilities. We're in the November 12 parks bond. We want to upgrade all of our pools, which will hopefully save on deferred maintenance costs. We want to begin to replace our aging infrastructure needs, which will reduce our operating costs as we move to more automated irrigation. Two-thirds of our park system, we still have manual irrigation, which means our gardeners during the day are carrying hose from quick coupler to quick coupler and watering, you know, the landscape. That's kind of crazy. Mm. You know, our irrigation systems should be automated and they should be operating at night when we don't have as many people in our parks using them.
If you're just joining us, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing San Francisco's parks with our guest, Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of San Francisco's Recreation and Parks Department. We invite you to call in with your questions and comments at this time. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. What are some questions you have for the General Manager of San Francisco's Rec and Parks Department? Some projects that you're excited about, some things that you would want to pitch, ideas you'd want to pitch to him, some concerns or feedback you want to give to Rec and Park. 415-841-4134. You can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, post a comment at klw.org, or on our Facebook page. So let's go to our first caller. And actually, she's calling from New Jersey, interestingly. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So do you have a question for Phil?
I do. We're obviously not natives of San Francisco, but we visit very, very often. We have family there. And I just have noticed so many positive changes in the Parks Department. I think it's part of the Parks Department. The fountain at the DeYoung Museum, the new playground, I think it's in Dolores Park. And I just wanted to ask Mr. Ginsberg what he's most proud of. I was also interested to know how the Parks Department in San Francisco compares to that in New York City, if you can even answer that. I don't know. In terms of budget, in terms of size, in that sense.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Elizabeth, for your call. Thanks
Thank you.
Calling from New Jersey.
Of course.
Okay.
What am I most proud about? Well, you know, the Dolores Park Playground, which just opened, is really fantastic. In fact, Sunset Magazine today just, you know, gave it its editor's pick of the issue of something that San Franciscans should be proud about. And it's, you know, a project that was a public-private partnership and, you know, the truth of the matter is government cannot do it all by itself in the 21st century. The funding just isn't there. And this was a $3 million playground renovation in, you know, people refer to Dolores Park as, you know, the heart of the city. And it is a park which is just loved. Some people would say loved to death. And on a sunny weekend might get 5,000 to 10,000 people. And this playground is just something we should all be incredibly, incredibly proud of, both in its design and its functionality, in its accessibility, in its frivolity. It's just a joyous, beautiful playground. And it was done in partnership with the community. The Friends of the Dolores Park Playground group were a group of concerned parents that wanted a better playground for their kids in that neighborhood and fought for years to make it happen. It was a partnership with philanthropy. We had $1.5 million gift from an organization, a foundation called the Mercer Fund. And, you know, we really sort of stretched the envelope in terms of design and what we could accomplish. And it's just amazing. So I'm certainly very proud of that.
And how does it compare to the New York system?
So our system, we're a smaller city. As I noted earlier, Golden Gate Park is a little bigger than Central Park. We are also in the recreation business, whereas the New York Parks Department has really, for the most part, gotten out of the active recreation business. They still operate a few recreation centers where people join and they actually pay a membership, and it operates almost like a public YMCA, but very limited programming. They have partners, nonprofit partners, and other types, and for-profit partners that do a lot of the recreational programming in New York. You know, New York has its own incredible park system, obviously, and you know, I think you know, places like obviously Central Park, but you know, the High Line is, you know, really a treasure to behold, and I think New York keeps us on our toes about how we can think about new ways to reinvent open space.
415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, post a comment at klw.org, or one on our Facebook page. Let's go to our next caller, Sarah from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, and thank you so much for taking my call. And my comment is that Mr. Ginsberg, he referred to McLaren Park as incredible resource, and I would agree with that. But following up on, I don't think we have to reinvent open space because they're considering a on one of the few open areas in San Francisco, they're considering a disc golf course. And my premise is that Golden Gate Park has already been stored, has been despoiled by so many recreational facilities. Why, when the original mandate from the parks was a place to restore people's souls? I think it's just unfortunate that recreation is now joined with parks, and I think the parks have suffered for it. But I pray that one open space, McLaren Park, could remain free, so people in this city will know what a wild park is like.
Thanks so much, Sarah, for your call.
Thank you so much for taking it.
Phil.
You know, I think that the caller exemplifies the passion that people have for our park system and the way our parks are important to people differently. And that is the neatest thing and also the most challenging part of my job and my staff's job, is to balance competing needs and values for open space. And everybody enjoys their parks differently. Some people like passive, wild, open space. Other people, you know, prefer active recreation. Some people like playgrounds. Some people like off-leash dog areas. Some people like trails. Some people like basketball courts. And the challenge, again, the challenge and opportunity that we have is to try to be something for everyone in our urban park system. We are not a rural park system. We're not... although we are blessed with some national park land, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area is also in San Francisco. The acreage that we steward is an urban park system, and it needs to have a little bit of everything, both wild area and active recreation. And I guarantee we get callers on both sides of the equation tonight. The proposal for disc golf is actually generated by those who like disc golf, and it's a community conversation.
Okay. Is it a potential source of revenue? Also.
No, it's really more of a place where people who enjoy that particular recreational amenity can go and use it. There is a disc golf course in Golden Gate Park that people love and is used and is always crowded. That's in the northwest quadrant of the city. So there is a desire among those who live in the city that participate in that activity that there be another opportunity to recreate in that particular manner in the southeastern part of the city. And, you know, again, I think this is a conversation that's ongoing. We want the community to try to reach consensus to the extent that that's possible over how the open space is used. But I will note that, you know, McLaren Park is, you know, 360 acres. So, you know, McLaren Park, like Golden Gate Park, has the opportunity to have to meet a variety of different needs and uses in its incredible acreage.
So that brings up the question of sort of governance and decision making and how that's all kind of taken into account. What is the oversight of the Rec and Parks Department, and how do you vet different programs and different suggestions, whether they're from the community or from some other source?
My bosses, there's a commission of seven citizens that are appointed to their positions and serve terms, and we bring policy decisions to the commission, and people have an opportunity to weigh in and offer public comment. But we don't even typically, something wouldn't even get to the commission without a lot of community conversation, and there are numerous ways to participate by joining a Friends Of group, a park advocacy group, by joining one of the umbrella park advocacy organizations like the San Francisco Parks Alliance. We typically have a variety of community meetings to discuss ideas that come forward, whether they be an initiative of our own or something that's been generated, an idea that's been generated by the community. Park advocates have very strong and passionate feelings, and it's a very participatory form of democracy.
Hmm. And where is the role of philanthropy in the support of the Parks Department? You mentioned an example with Dolores Park and the Mercer Foundation, but how big of a part of the budget pie is philanthropy in supporting your work?
Well, we could not do it without philanthropic support. It is fundamentally vital, and the caller from New Jersey who is asking for comparisons to New York, I think everybody's familiar with the success story of the Central Park Conservancy, where, you know, a group of philanthropists and concerned citizens, you know, may have actually saved Central Park in the 70s from, you know, I think the story goes, being deeded back to the federal government. Philanthropy is fundamentally important. There are two, there are different types of philanthropy. Philanthropy typically happens in the form of capital gifts and capital investments. And we've been blessed, not just the Dolores Park Playground, but the Conservatory of Flowers, our beloved windmills, the Presidio Heights Playground. There are numerous instances of San Franciscans, you know, really stepping up and, you know, who have some capacity to help us keep our park system going. Over the last few years, however, we've been exploring and working with the philanthropic community to support our operations, which is vastly different and not something that philanthropists will typically get excited about. By the way, Stern Grove, you know, the wonderful Stern Grove festivals that happen all summer long, is really, it's philanthropy that makes that happen. Mm-hmm. Hardly Strictly Bluegrass, philanthropy that makes that happen. But on the operating side, we've been working hard with the philanthropic community to help us fill some of the gaps. And
so what's that look like?
So, for example, Jolie Rec Center in the Bayview is now open an extra 2 days a week because of a gift by a family a three-year gift by a family foundation. At Crocker Amazon, we've actually staffed we have a halftime gardener that helps keep the ball fields free of as many gophers as possible as the result of philanthropy. We just got a philanthropic gift to support a gardener in the polo fields. So the Parks Alliance is right in the middle of something called our Gear Up campaign. While we have our bond dollars go to for capital and to build buildings, we don't have any funding to actually put things in the new buildings. So the Parks Alliance has been spearheading a campaign to raise philanthropic dollars to fill our new facilities that are the product of the 2008 Parks Bond with furniture, fixtures, equipment, basketballs, ping pong tables.
So since we're comparing ourselves to New York, how much philanthropy compared to New York?
You know, I don't really know. I mean, New York is, you know, dwarfs us in size. And I think if you look at, frankly, the number of the folks that live around the edge of Central Park and versus the folks that live around Golden Gate Park, there might be a little bit more capacity around with the folks who live on Central Park West and Park Avenue. But, you know, San Franciscans are incredibly generous.
Do you have a donate button on your website, for example?
We sure do.
Oh, excellent, yes. Excellent.
Right. And we will soon have a new iPhone app.
Excellent.
For Rec and Park that will help the public know what's happening in our parks and also give them an opportunity to donate.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're discussing San Francisco's parks tonight with our guest, Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you have a question or comment about a program or a project that's being proposed for by the Rec and Parks Department, or some idea you'd like to pitch to Phil Ginsberg, this is your chance. 415-841-4134. Email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Post a comment at klw.org or one on our Facebook page. And let's go next to Kelly from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hey there, thank you. First off, I just want to say I'm thankful that we live in one of the most beautiful places on earth, and our Rec and Park Department, I think, should be commended for keeping it that beautiful and doing so much with so little. But I have a question for Mr. Ginsberg, which is, how do we engage our city officials and citizens to appreciate and support our city parks more? I mean, a third of your funding just isn't enough, you know, to keep this incredible place going. So thank you.
All right, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks, Kelly. It's a great question. I think San Franciscans need to keep doing what they're doing in some respects. You know, I think it has become certainly clearer to our elected officials the important role that open space provides in this city. I know that as the result of some advocacy from the San Francisco members of the San Francisco Parks Alliance, you know, for the first time in a while, as a result of the budget process. The Board of Supervisors has made a decision to reinvest some money back into Rec and Parks budget for some a couple of additional gardeners and some additional Park Patrol officers, which is, you know, really great. But I think, you know, our elected leaders and our policymakers really need to understand and hear from San Franciscans about the vital importance that our parks and open space and recreation play in the quality of life of city living. You know, we talk a lot about the city, there's been a big conversation about family flight and keeping families, you know, happy, healthy, and safe in the city, and to provide them with accessible opportunities to enjoy a high quality of life. There can be no more important ingredient, I would argue, than parks, which are responsible for keeping people healthy. One third of the city's kids and one third of California's kids suffer from childhood obesity. Keeping our kids safe at a time when, you know, our school districts are rolling back summer programs to give our kids an opportunity to make, you know, healthy and safe recreational choices. There's nothing more fundamental, and I just think we need to amplify that conversation that we live here and we're able to live here and enjoy being here because of the quality of our parks and the accessibility of our recreational opportunities.
415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Kyle from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on. First off, I just wanted to say I adore the park system in San Francisco. I'm at least a weekly user. I have so much fun there. So thank you for doing such a wonderful job with them. I wanted to speak to you about slacklining. Slacklining is kind of like tightrope walking, which is an activity that is becoming more and more common in the park. And as a slackliner, I've noticed some very inconsistent policing when it comes to, you know, interactions with employees of the city and the rangers and whatnot. And I would love to pitch a program for, you know, teaching people how to slackline properly and safely. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kyle. And how could Kyle pitch his program to you?
Well, the point is a great one, because Kyle speaks not, I'm sure there are many callers that are asking, what's slacklining? I happen to know, and I've done it. And actually, we offer it as a program up at Camp Mather. It is safe tightrope walking, as it were. I'm terrible at it. But it's an example of a new and emerging type of recreational opportunity. And I think this is one where we as a department have not kept up as well with evolving trends in recreation as we need to and we should. Slacklining involves attaching a really sort of slack line to trees, although there are other anchors. And, you know, that has to be done in a way that actually protects our trees. But it is absolutely a joyous and extremely challenging recreational activity. And I think, you know, we do need to do a better job of integrating it into our parks for those that want to do it. And I would encourage Kyle to, email me or contact me at the department, we can engage in that conversation.
And we'll link Kyle, we will link Phil's email address on our website at klw.org, and you just search for City Visions. So let's go to a post from the KLW website from someone who describes themselves by the name of Activist. And it says, as a longtime supporter of KLW, I do like this program and glad to have the general manager of RPD, or Recreation Parks Department, on. The general manager should realize that folks I know want more gardeners and rec directors at RPD, not more infrastructure. Enough is enough with the upgrades. We want help with what we have.
Me too. We have to take care of, we're not building new facilities. We're actually protecting the assets that we have through our bond and capital program. And the source of funding is very different to invest and protect our capital. In this bond, we're cognizant of some of the resource constraints on our operations. And we are trying to do things, as I mentioned, like fixing our irrigation system, which would free up you know, hundreds, if not thousands of hours of gardener time to do real horticultural work and to really engage in their craft rather than lugging hose around a landscape. You know, we have a very small and extremely busy structural maintenance staff that spends a ridiculous amount of time repairing the boilers and the you know, heating equipment in our pools and keeping them safe for everybody to swim, because our pools, some of our pools are 40, 50, 60 years old and they need to be fixed up. And so we're trying to leverage more operational capacity out of some of the capital investments that we're making. But ultimately, I agree with the park advocate who submitted the comment in that we do, as a city, need to invest more in gardeners and, you know, in our custodians and our structural maintenance staff and our recreation staff. And, you know, we would love to be able to deliver as robust a system as we are given the opportunity to provide.
415-841-4134 or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, post a comment at klw.org, or on our Facebook page. Tonight, as we discuss San Francisco's parks with Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Park Department. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So let's go back to talk a little bit more about that bond. So what are you hoping to do with the money that would be coming your way should the voters approve this ballot measure in November?
So the proposed parks bond is a $195 million park improvement bond, which I think it's very important for listeners to understand would not result in any new or additional taxes for the public. The city's very thoughtful capital planning process only calls for new bonds and new infrastructure investment to occur when old bonds mature or expire. The bond will do a number of things. It will provide some reinvestment and rejuvenation in a number of neighborhood parks all around the city, places like Rossi Pool, George Christopher Playground, Glen Canyon Park, Joe DiMaggio Playground, Mountain Lake Park, the Potrero Hill Rec Center, South Park, West Sunset Playground, Willy Woo Woo Wong Playground in Chinatown. Those are some named projects. And then we have some pools of money. We have about $15 million allocated for playground safety and playground enhancements. You know, we have some amazing playgrounds in the city, and we have some old and frankly failing playgrounds in the city, and we have a responsibility to all of our neighborhoods to make sure our playgrounds are safe and fun. There will be some investment, hopefully, in both Golden Gate Park and McLaren Park, our two largest regional parks in the city. There's a $5 million investment for water conservation. That's, again, to replace a lot of our aging irrigation systems that are, you know, we're, you know, losing water, wasting water, and they require an incredible amount of maintenance. And there's something that's very exciting, which we did in the 2008 Parks Bond, which is nearing completion. We have only one major project to go, and we hope to have that pretty far along by the time voters vote on the 2012 Parks Bond, and that is something called the Community Opportunity Fund, where the community decides what they want to do with the money. The other projects were the result of a community conversation, lots of them, frankly, probably somewhere between 25 to 45 different community meetings and public meetings. And, you know, we tried to arrive at a project list based on a number of criteria, you know, primarily health and safety first. And then, you know, we looked at usage patterns and, you know, geographical diversity and need, and tried to have a real blend of what we put together in the bond. But to the extent that we miss something that, you know, a park group or a community group or a neighborhood group really cares about and really needs and wants to work for and wants to leverage some of their own volunteer time or fundraising opportunities, there's a $12 million pot for people to, for groups to submit their own projects for funding. And this has worked incredibly well in the 2008 Parks Bond.
Some people might say we just had a bond that passed in 2008,
yeah,
one that passed again in 2000. Why another bond at this point? How is this building on previous bond measures?
Well, again, you know, you start with, you know, $1.4 billion worth of deferred maintenance needs, which the bonds in 2000 and 2008 have really begun to chip away at, but certainly haven't addressed in, you know, the park system's needs in its entirety. And then you plug in the city's 10-year capital plan, which is, again, a really sort of thoughtful approach to investing in infrastructure, not just in the parks department, but in our streets, in our libraries, at Muni, at the port, in our public safety facilities. And, you know, the city has a schedule, again, based on documented identifiable need as to when to invest. And we will be just about completed the 2008 Parks Bond. And, you know, there are some economies of scale to be gained by keeping our architecture and design staff and, you know, to keep everybody sort of moving in the same direction and to begin the next wave of park improvements that people hold pretty dear.
And did you stay within the what you said you were going to do with the 2008 bond?
Yeah, I mean, we're really proud about it. On Saturday, actually, we have a very joyous ribbon cutting at the Betty Ann Ong Chinese Recreation Center in Chinatown, which is probably our most active and most used facility. And a beautiful new facility will open on Saturday. You know, all of our projects have been on or under budget, and a few of our projects have definitely taken longer than I think we anticipated. But, you know, it's much better to do them right than to do them quick. And one of the things that we've strived for is to really engage the park community and the neighborhoods around a particular capital project in understanding what their needs are and what they'd like to see in their park. For example, Dolores Park, which we finished the playground, but we actually have, we're moving forward on another $12 million of investment for the rest of the park. And that is a park, again, with aging irrigation systems, inadequate restrooms, horrible ADA access, and some crumbling, you know, maintenance infrastructure. I think that there were close to 50 community meetings to try to achieve some sort of consensus about what was important to very different types of park users. Mm. And so, you know, we would rather take the time and do it right and try to, you know, achieve consensus or at least have as good of an understanding about what our neighborhoods really want out of their neighborhood parks than to do them quickly.
So to go to another comment from the KLW website from someone who calls themselves San Francisco Ocean Edge. That person writes, "We are concerned that the Department of Recreation and Park is turning to the taxpayers for more bond funding when the money from the 2008 bond is being used to destroy the western end of Golden Gate Park by building a soccer complex there. The project will remove a grassy play area and install over 7 acres of artificial turf and 150,000 watts of night lighting on 60-foot poles. The lights will be lighted from dusk until 10 p.m. every night of the year, impacting couples who stroll along the promenade at sunset, families who stargaze at Land's End, and the fire worshippers who enjoy the fire rings on the beach in the dark. Proposed alternatives to this project have been ignored by the department."
The beach chalet, probably the most vetted, discussed, and debated soccer field project in San Francisco history. So in the 2008 Parks Bond, there was money that was allocated for playfield renovations. And some of those playfield renovations were actually synthetic turf renovations. We have a big problem in San Francisco, and I get back to you know, our fundamental one of our fundamental missions and goals, which is to help families who are living in the city to help them thrive. We have a dramatic shortage of playfields in San Francisco, and you know the goal of the Beach Chalet project is currently a soccer field. It's currently a horrible, gopher-ridden, sometimes dangerous soccer field that is in such bad condition that it is really only open about 50% of the time. We have been working towards a renovation of that soccer field that will involve synthetic turf, which has evolved quite a bit in over generations and is now used you know, widely in park systems. New York City, we talked about, has over one, you know, over 100 synthetic turf fields in its inventory. And it will add an extra 10,000 hours of play at that site. and not just at that site, to our entire inventory of fields, so that kids from every neighborhood, not just around Golden Gate Park, will have more of an opportunity to play. You know, kids, giving kids an opportunity to practice, to play, it's a big challenge, and it's, you know, I think one of the most important things that we should be doing.
Hmm. And we've had some pretty positive comments from our listeners and callers so far. Another area of controversy that I would be remiss if I didn't point to it before the end of our program is a lot of controversy around the revenue-generating measures that the department has posed over the last few years. Some unsuccessful proposals include installing parking meters in Golden Gate Park, having expanded concessions in certain parks like the beloved Dolores Park, and others, ways that the department has been trying to raise revenue. And the concern that a vocal group or groups of people have raised is that somehow this is commercializing the parks or privatizing them. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean when this is a basically a public trust? So some comments to those concerns.
Sure. You know, our goal is to not just preserve but enhance public access to our parks and facilities. And at a time when, again, you know, we've faced $40 million in general fund cuts over the last 6 or 7 years, and the public has shown no appetite for significant fee increases or new taxes, and has made it very clear to us that they don't want to see any reduction in gardening staff, that they don't want to see any reduction in custodial staff. They don't want to see anything happening in their parks that will reduce their enjoyment or reduce the ability of the department to keep our parks and facilities clean and safe. Where do you go? I mean, you know, again, it's just a difficult math problem. And there is not an urban park system in the entire country that does not rely on earned revenue within its system. We are all about completely focused about preserving the public trust, as it were. We want to preserve our programs. We want gardeners in our parks. We want custodians. But the truth of the matter is if we're being asked, we're given less support to do it, you know, we don't have very many choices. And so our strategy, which has really been a good one, and not every idea that we've had has been met with, great support in any particular park, but that's okay. You know, you try ideas, you engage the community in a conversation, and some things work and some things, you know, some ideas people don't like. And that's part of government. But, you know, the strategy overall has been to add park amenities that people really enjoy that will also generate revenue. Outside Lands has been visited, you know, by 70, 75,000 people a day over a 3-day period once a year that generates $1.4 million in revenue for the department. That's enough to pay for about 15 gardeners for a year, you know, 15, 16, 17 gardeners for a year.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of follow-up questions. What, I know there's some controversy about Coit Tower. And who's going to be operating Coit Tower and having private events there? Where does that stand at this point?
So Coit Tower is, you know, one of our most beautiful and iconic assets. And I think that there is great consensus over the idea that we need to protect it and, you know, we need to care for it and care for the incredible murals that are inside it. And, you know, what's happened, there's been a concessionaire in Coit Tower for decades and decades and decades. I don't think that concessionaire the department has done as good of a job as it should have done in making sure that the murals were protected and that we were addressing the deferred maintenance needs in the building. And, you know, the good news is, despite, you know, the controversy of the day, is that that's where we're headed. You know, we're working very closely with the Arts Commission and have actually given the Arts Commission, which has responsibility for the murals inside Coit Tower, $250,000 to help revitalize them. We've done a really, really thorough study about the deferred maintenance needs that are in Coit Tower, because it's one thing to clean up the murals, but if you've got a leaky roof, the murals are going to get damaged yet again. So we actually have a really good roadmap of the types of capital investments that Coit Tower needs. And, you know, we're trying to work with the community to upgrade the concessionaire that's there now with someone that, you know, with an entity that, you know, will both meet the needs of the neighborhood and meet the needs of you know, the hundreds of thousands of people who visit the site.
And the plan would be that perhaps there would be private events that you could rent Koi Tower out for private events?
Yeah, it's a very small piece of the overall proposal. It's the one that's been most sensationalized. You know, Koi Tower was actually originally designed with a mezzanine to host private events, believe it or not. And, you know, we have City Hall hosts private events. All kinds of, you know, very important, iconic, historic facilities do host private events. The issue is not private events. The issue is, you know, frankly, working with the community and the neighborhood to make sure it's done appropriately and sensitively and is respectful of both the building itself and the neighborhood.
Okay. And we actually have time for one more caller. Let's see. Sorry, we're not going to be able to get to everyone tonight, but let's go to Lee from Sonoma. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. In traveling around, I've always been impressed by, in contrast to other cities, the number of people that participate in the rec department's programs, events, the concerts. It's certainly a compliment to Mr. Ginsberg and his staff. How would this compare to other major cities? Because when you talk about funding, part of the funding isn't just operations and maintenance. It's about how people use the facilities in the park. What percentage of people in the city actually participate in these programs?
Thanks so much for your call.
Well, it's a great question. You know, we start with the Trust for Public Land data that says that, you know, 96% of San Franciscans live within a 10-minute walk of a park, which means almost everybody is using their park. And about two-thirds of San Franciscans are regular park users, meaning, you know, they're in the park at least once a month. Golden Gate Park gets 15 million visitors a year. So, you know, it is a mix of accommodating San Franciscans and, frankly, all of the people that visit San Francisco. You know, whether you're enjoying a picnic in a park, going to a concert, or participating in one of our recreation programs, you know, almost everybody is the answer.
So one last point about comparisons to other places. You mentioned how New York City has sort of contracted out its recreation in its parks. Do you see that in the future of San Francisco's Rec and Park Department?
I don't. And that's actually one of the things I'm most proud about. And Seattle's done the same thing, by the way. They work with a nonprofit third-party provider of recreation, and a number of cities have done the same thing. You know, I think if you were to ask me what is one of the things that I'm most proud about, proud that the department has accomplished in recent years, despite all of the budget challenges, it's revitalizing public recreation in the city. Our public recreation programming has never been stronger. We're operating right now, as we speak, 67 different summer camps all around town in which kids can do all kinds of wonderful things. We've got robust senior programming, robust Tiny Tot programming. We've got incredible inclusionary programming. We're running a camp this summer for children on the autism spectrum. You know, public recreation, despite all the bad budget news, public recreation is alive and well in San Francisco, and it's not going anywhere.
And so for our listeners who want to learn more about your programs and find out how they can voice their concerns and opinions and perhaps even donate, where should they go?
SFRecPark.org. SFRecPark.org.
And are there any upcoming hearings or events that you want to make sure people know about?
Well, again, the ribbon cutting for the Betty Ann Ong Chinese Rec Center is really going to be spectacular on Saturday. You know, this is what we would call high season. You know, from now through the end of October, there is something happening in every single park in the city almost every single day of the week. And whether you want to volunteer with us, whether you want to reserve a picnic table, have a birthday party, get married, go to a concert, swim, play golf, you know, slackline, walk on a trail, it's available for you.
And sorry to all the listeners who wrote in and called. Sorry we couldn't get to all your comments. But that's City Visions for this evening. I'm Joseph Pace, and our guest this evening was Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of San Francisco's Recreation and Parks Department. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was Eric Wayne. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton, who happens to also be our senior producer. And join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next Monday as we discuss San Francisco's mid-market redevelopment plan. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.